Good morning. And welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I am Sandy Ingham, Prairie's minister. Prairie is, or tries to be, an open-hearted and open-minded congregation, welcoming all, whatever your religious background or lack thereof, wherever you are on the journey of life, whatever your ethnicity or the color of your skin, whatever your sexual orientation or your gender identity or your family makeup, we welcome you. Later in the service, if you are new or this is one of your first times here, we will invite you to introduce yourself if you want to. And we always encourage you to attend more than one service because the services can be different each Sunday. These then are the opening words, and they're by Marta Flanagan. In this time, we turn our thoughts to how we can touch and be touched, love and be loved, forgive and be forgiven, heal and be healed, so that the goodness of our lives is a shared blessing. For every time we make a mistake and we decide to start over, we light this chalice. For every time we are lonely and we let someone be our friend, we light this chalice. For every time we are disappointed and we choose to hope, we light this chalice. This is a reading from Unitarian Universalist Minister David Blanchard, titled For the Love of Millard. He writes, that is, David writes, even the most rational of religions, that would be us, cannot live without myths. A dangerous one among Unitarian Universalists is that we are somehow better than everyone else, smarter, more sophisticated, more progressive, better traveled, smarter, more humane, wiser, accomplished in the professions. Did I say smarter? We like to list the famous folks who were Unitarian or Universalist throughout history. Presidents, statesmen, artists, literary figures, social reformers, and the like. This, I know, is meant to impress. Maybe it's really just another way we oppress the vast multitudes of folks who find living the most ordinary lives a supreme accomplishment. For that reason, Blanchard writes, I'm advocating we remember the Unitarian Millard Fillmore, the 13th President of the United States, was born January 7th, 1800 in Moravia, New York. And Moravia is proud of it. It's unlikely that Moravia will send forth another president, even a bad one, so they are trying to make the best of things. Millard Fillmore is generally acknowledged to be one of the worst presidents we have had. Remembered primarily for installing the first bathtub in the White House and promoting the pro-slavery compromise of 1850. Leaving him off our litany of liberal lights isn't so much a disservice to him as it is a distortion of our self-understanding as a human community about our capacity to be something less than perfectly astounding people. I don't think I will go around promoting liberal religion to newcomers as the faith of Millard Fillmore. That would be, now this is a reference that those of you who are younger might not get. That would be like selling Fords by advertising a new model with the line from the people who brought you the Edsel. You can look Edsel up. But on the other hand, Blanchard continues, I think I'll be more careful about how much I name drop as a means of validating the integrity of our faith. It can belong to anyone and is neither the cause for their greatness, nor is it shamed by human struggle and failure. Millard Fillmore is a good person for us to remember, not just because he was Unitarian, not just because he was the president, but because when we claim him as our own, we are also affirming something within ourselves that is unencumbered by shame and undaunted by disappointment. When we accept poor Millard, we are accepting our own ordinariness, our own mistakes, our own flaws. Because if we let Millard count, then there are good reasons why we should count too. To make each day a thing complete shall be our New Year vow. That is the last line in the opening hymn, The Ceaseless Flow of Endless Time. If you are wondering why I chose a hymn about New Year's vows, today is Rosh Hashanah, New Year's Day on the Jewish calendar. For many years, I have been drawn to this New Year's Day, much more than to any January 1st. The Jewish High Holy Days, not the Jewish High Holidays, Jewish High Holy Days, appeal to me for many reasons. Among them, the 10 days of observance between New Year's Day, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. These days are a reminder to me that I am ordinary, that I make mistakes, that I have flaws, that I come in late, and that is okay. By reflecting on these things, by tapping into my inner Millard Fillmore, I hope that I can become a better human, a more accepting one, accepting of myself first, and from that, more accepting of others. To make each day a thing complete is one of my Jewish New Year goals, perhaps the main one. The story, Fiona's Little Lie, struck a chord, caused an almost visceral reaction in me. Some memory of mine got pulled out of the memory bank, a memory of telling a lie. When I was about the age of Fiona in the story, I have never remembered this, to my knowledge, as an adult. My little lie was about as believable as Fiona's. I don't think there were alligators involved, but it was pretty, I don't remember what I had lied about, or you know what I made up, what fantasy I went off on. I don't remember my exact age, but I'd say it was around 6 or 7. What was amazing to me when this memory surfaced was the memory of feelings that I had when I told the lie. I mean, who would expect you could remember something like that? The feelings were I was afraid, I was scared, both of being found out and not being found out. I was ashamed, embarrassed, sneaky. I was not afraid of punishment. My parents weren't scary people or unkind or unfair, but of disappointing the adults in my life, of not living up to their expectations, which would seem to indicate that at a very early age, I learned that being sorry, saying I was sorry about something, was connected to perfectionism. I am a recovering perfectionist. Did I eventually end up saying, I'm sorry? Yes, I'm pretty sure that I did say, I'm sorry. But I am not certain to whom I said this. Probably to my mother or my grandfather, the two favorite adults in my life, or the ones that I certainly wanted to live up to their standards. Forget about living up to my dad's, couldn't do that. How do we incorporate less than perfect into our lives? How do we accept I'm sorry as a necessary part of being human? How do we know when to say I'm sorry? Answering these questions and paying attention to them, I am drawn to the Jewish high holy days, this 10-day period of introspection, when we try, as Rabbi Harold Kushner says in his book, To Life, when we try to look at ourselves without pretense and find ways in which we would like to be different to make the next Yom Kippur confrontation with Judaism's standards a less embarrassing one. No, I do not have a Jewish background, although I sometimes wonder if I was Jewish in some other lifetime, if there is such a thing. But I find something in these holy days that resonates with me in a way that similar periods of introspection in other faith traditions don't. Lent, for example, or Ramadan. Of course, I don't have any, time or framework for Ramadan. In a very, very limited manner, I do try to observe Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and the days in between. It is not that I think some kind of godlike entity is keeping track of what I am doing in some big book of life. But, as I wrote in this month's newsletter, this 10-day period of reflection, contemplation, and meditation appeals to something in me, perhaps my inner introvert that seldom gets to be in the spotlight. And part of reflecting on how one has lived one's life during the past 12 months involves the phrase, I'm sorry. In his book, To Life, Rabbi Kushner talks about the benefits of observing the Sabbath, but these same benefits apply to the high holy days. For one thing, the Hebrew words that describe how God rested after 6 days of work have different meanings. One is, he ceased his labors. But the other meaning fascinates me. God rested because it was only through this rest that he got his soul back, in Kushner's words. So it is between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur that we have a time of rest to quiet our souls, if you will. Now, I know Unitarian Universalists don't necessarily believe in a soul, whatever that means, but I take soul as spirit, force of life. But this isn't meant as a time for sleeping in, taking naps, going to bed earlier. No, not that kind of rest. The rest means as in shutting out the noise and the frenetic pace of the world long enough to give yourself time to breathe, to contemplate where you've been over the last 12 months and where you might be going or where you would like to go over the next 12. Your regular everyday life, though, goes on. It's not like you go to a retreat somewhere. You might, if you're lucky. But if you're parents of small children, it's unlikely that you're going to any kind of a retreat, maybe the bathroom, for a few minutes. Yeah. And, of course, not even the bathroom. We'll talk. There you go. Yes. So that's the trick. And remember, the Jews have been doing this for what? Hundreds and hundreds of years. They've somehow managed to find some time in these high holy days to breathe, to contemplate. Okay, you're trying to get your soul back. Well, let's say you're trying to get back to the essence of yourself. Maybe to that early child before you told that lie. And you're trying to be your true, find your true self. But you're not ceasing from your labors. I read that phrase yesterday, and I thought, wait a minute. I just heard, not the ceasing from your labors part, but the getting your soul back. And I just heard this. Somebody just said this to me in the course of some ordinary conversation. Well, the last 3 or 4 days, I was in northern Minnesota helping run a restaurant, mostly washing dishes. That's the only skill set they've taught me so far. My daughter and son-in-law run this place, and they are exhausted. They are right outside of Voyageurs National Park, and the season is just ending. And you try to find help, good help, in a place that's out in the middle of nowhere. So the good help they did have went back to college. They were frantic. I went up. I washed dishes for 6 hours straight on Sunday. That was the only time the sun shone all week, too. Well, I try not to take the weather personally. Okay, my son-in-law said to me that he's missing his rest. And he said, I don't mean my sleep, although he's missing that too. I'm missing whatever it is that re-energizes me. For him, it's hunting. I'm not sure it actually means the shooting of the animals, although we've had many discussions about this. I think it's being outside, being in the woods. And he looked at me and he said, Ma, if I don't get out in the woods soon, well, I just have to do that. I have to, if I am going to get my soul back. My son-in-law, whose birthday is today, is not a religious person in the conventional sense. So, what? Have to get his soul back. All right, if I do this right, the high holy days help me get my soul back, renew my faith in myself, first of all, and from that, my faith in humanity. Of course, as a good Unitarian Universalist, I know that there's nothing inherently holy about today, about this Rosh Hashanah or any particular day, whether it's Yom Kippur or Christmas or Easter. There's nothing holy or sacred or special about any day until and unless we humans take a pause in the rat race, the hectic way we live, and say, this day is different. And I am going to pause on this day and simply be, even if it's only for a couple of minutes. The Jewish High Holy Days are a time to rethink priorities, to look at the year that is ending and say, I'm sorry, as necessary and or appropriate to our own unique lives, as well as to make resolutions in the sense of resolving to change habits and attitudes that prevent us from moving forward. That starts with saying, I'm sorry, to ourselves as well as to others. And for me, for this coming year, moving forward means, among other things, more involvement, time, and energy in social justice work. I commend those of you who go to those meetings every month, those meetings of Moses. You know who you are. And I sometimes think, what difference is one more person going to make at a demonstration or a protest? And you know who you are, too, those of you who go to those. I'm sorry that I missed too many. In Fiona's Little Lie, Miss Beeth, the teacher, says, let's have the truth, please, Fiona. A good I'm sorry always clears the air. Now, you will note, well, I don't know if you note such things, but if you looked at your order of service, you will note that I put down I'm sorry three times with different punctuation after each one. I'm sorry when you're clearing the air and you've just said the alligators ate the cupcakes. That's a good example of saying, I'm sorry, and ending the phrase with a period. Rabbi Kushner reminds us, our real goal is not to strive for happiness, but to strive for goodness. If we do that, happiness will follow, Kushner tells us. And just as an aside, when I was reading Kushner for this morning, he defined religion this way: the effort to make people into human beings. The effort to make people into human beings. I like that. There is an important connection between I'm sorry and the concept of forgiveness. Isn't every I'm sorry utterance automatically a request by the speaker for forgiveness? Or might that depend on what punctuation is used at the end of the phrase? There is also an important connection between the phrase I'm sorry and striving for perfection. If we can't let go of our quest for perfection, if we can't ever admit that we might be wrong, our I'm sorry's probably won't mean much. As a bumper sticker puts it, the man who can smile, well, the person who can smile when things are going wrong, has just thought of someone to blame it on. There's another facet of the Jewish High Holy Days that intrigues me. That's the Kol Nidre prayer. Hail Nidra means all vows. In that prayer, a person asks to be released from all vows and promises she or he made last year and was not able to live up to, so that these can't be held against us in the new year. It's that clean slate concept. Whether or not you believe in prayer, whether or not you are interested in asking any deity to release you from all vows and promises made last year, the point, at least for this Unitarian Universalist, is a recognition of human frailty and fallibility, beginning with my own frailty and fallibility. A few words about forgiveness. About 2.5 years ago, I did some reflections here on forgiveness. And I divided forgiveness up into three sets: mundane, murky, and miraculous. Well, I realized that that's just another way of saying I'm sorry with a period, I'm sorry with a question mark, I'm sorry with an exclamation point. When we're children, we learn very quickly that there are a lot of times when we're expected to say, I'm sorry, sorry. Perhaps we're not quite aware of what those two words mean when we first begin to utter them. This is a primitive form, though, of asking for forgiveness. We don't yet completely understand the complexity contained in those two simple words, I'm sorry. Well, a certain amount of this is fairly normal behavior, given the frenetic way in which we live now, that we're always saying, you know, I'm sorry. Sometimes I go through several days of seeming to have foot in mouth disease. I say things that I should not have said. I speak without thinking. And modern ways in which we communicate do not help. Take email, for example. If you hit that send button without practicing Buddhist attentiveness to your message, you could get in some trouble. Some of you may have seen a movie 2 or 3 years ago called The Railway Man. Sound vaguely familiar to you moviegoers? It was about a prisoner, that was true, supposedly a true story, based on a true story, about a prisoner of war in the Pacific Theater in World War II. His name was Eric Lomax, and I think he was British. But he finally went back to Burma to confront the man who had tortured him in Burma when the prisoners of war were building a railway. And then he did something astounding, or perhaps I should say failed to do what a part of you might have wanted him to do. I'm still talking about Lomax here, the person who was the prisoner when he confronted the man who had tortured him. I was in the movie, I was rooting for him to, I don't know, at least punch him once. But he didn't. He talked to him, and then he said, I will never forget. I will never forget what you did to me. But I do completely forgive you. That was amazing. I'm not a big believer in the forgive and forget phrase, though. I don't think you can forget some things. There's one more aspect of forgiveness that I need to mention this morning before I end my remarks, and it has to do with a seventh principle of ours about the interdependent web. My thoughts about forgiveness often come back to the need we all have to be forgiven by the universe for what we are doing and have done to the earth. I can't go there being climate change or global warming without being incredibly depressed. I don't really care right now what we blame it on, but I do care that we start paying attention to the fact that maybe we should change some of our habits. And I like to think that I'm pretty good in my care of Mother Earth. I mean, I bicycle, I walk, I don't use a dryer. I have a fairly fuel-efficient car. I don't turn up the heat until I have icicles dripping from my nose, but then I blow all that when I get on an airplane. There are no end to the examples of brokenness that I want to do something about. Syria is certainly right up there right now. aren't we doing anything? But these are things that are overwhelming. I mean, if I'm overwhelmed by going to local meetings because I think one person won't make a difference, what do we do about the biggies like Syria? I want to be forgiven for my helplessness and my silence and my seeming indifference. This would be an example of "I'm sorry" with an exclamation point at the end. And I have to read this one very short Mary Oliver poem titled "The Morning Paper." Read one newspaper daily. The morning edition is the best, for by evening you know that you at least have lived through another day. And let the disasters, the unbelievable yet approved decisions, soak in. I don't need to name the countries, ours among them. What keeps us from falling down, our faces to the ground, ashamed, ashamed. I'm sorry, exclamation point. That's my words, not Oliver's. There's more to the art of forgiveness, though, than ending up in despair or being ashamed. David Blanchard, in his meditation, The Art of Forgiveness, tells us that one of the things that helps us be more fulfilled, more connected, more present to the joys and wonders of the world is saying, "I'm sorry." In the end, Blanchard said, those who have found a way to forgive know that the most profound work of forgiveness is done not for those who want it, but for the sake of mending our own soul and for the freedom we find when we recklessly squander our forgiveness. I want to invite you in our response time to think of the times that you did or you did not say you were sorry and what punctuation you used at the end of that phrase. Now the question mark one, "I'm sorry," is, well, you can put your own spin on that. I think that's when you're not sure and maybe you don't really mean it. "I'm sorry," maybe. I have plenty of "I'm sorries" that I'm going to try to work on in the next 10 days. Yom Kippur ends with a service called Nila, which literally means in Hebrew, "the closing of the gate." This is a reference to walled cities of ancient times. And so it is with the seasons. They end, though not definitively, like the Yom Kippur, the day, you know, the holy days end. The seasons do end as summer turns to fall and as fall turns to winter. But they each present their own window of opportunity, their own invitation to us to begin again. There are many new years during the course of what we call the calendar year. They're usually individual ones, though, and you never know when you might experience one. Doing all of this reflecting and meditating and trying to think what you can do better in the next 12 months, this takes patience, and that's why we begin again after 12 months. That reminds me of an old Jewish joke. This is probably another reason I'm drawn to Judaism. I love the humor. A tailor says to the customer, "Sorry, the pants aren't ready yet. Next week." Customer says, "What's taking you so long? God made the whole world in just 6 days. The tailor says, "I know, but look at the mess the world is in. And look at how good the pants are coming out." Our reflecting, our meditating, if possible, our contemplating, takes patience. It also takes courage, resolve, determination. I don't know if anybody ever reads the quotes at the top of the order of service, but I spend some time on them. So draw your attention to the one at the top of this week's. By someone named Anne Lamott. You may be familiar with Anne Lamott. The search is the meaning. The search is the meaning. The search for beauty, love, kindness, and restoration in this difficult, wired, and often alien modern world. The miracle is that we are here, that no matter how undone we've been the night before, we wake up every morning and are still here. It is phenomenal just to be. A little bit more of Lamont here before I end my remarks, if I can find it. If you come from a relatively healthy and loving family, you can make a mistake, go back, take it out, or patch it. This is a book of her writings titled Stitches. And her point is that we so often can't just really start all over again. She uses, I'm not a sewer, so if you are, S-E-W, E-R. Is that even a word?
It looks like sewer, but it's
sewer. Okay. This will mean more to you probably than it did to me. She gives several examples, including the night her dog. She had a rescue dog that was afraid of juncos. They're you know, the birds that are teeny. Afraid of everything, I guess. And one night, as Lamont starts the sentence, "Well, apparently the assassins breached my front gate," or it was probably Junko's, "and the dog went berserk," and the dog ran into the house and ran through and into her brand new drapes, and the dog came out looking like the hippos in Fantasia. It had the drape thing around it. So, anyway, she took the drapes to a friend of hers, a seamstress, and the person restored them. And the point of Lamont's story and many other stories of hers, she didn't restore the drapes, her friend, in the same manner. They didn't look at all like what they had before, but they worked and they were stitched. And the point is, and the title of the book is Stitches, sometimes it's one stitch at a time, one stitch at a time to repair something. Oh, one more thing here. Lamont says, "You start wherever you can. You see a great need, so you thread a needle. You tie a knot in your thread. You find one place in the cloth through which to take one stitch. One simple stitch. Nothing fancy, just one. That's strong and true. The knot will anchor your thread. And once that's done, you take one more stitch. Teach someone the alphabet, say. No matter how long that takes. And then how to read. And so on and so forth. The High Holy Days. A time to contemplate. A time to think about going forward. If you want to follow along with while I say the closing words, they are number 477 in the back of the hymnal by Vivian Pomeroy. "Forgive us that often we forgive ourselves so easily and others so hardly. Forgive us that we expect perfection from those to whom we show none. Forgive us for repelling people by the way we set a good example. Forgive us the folly of trying to improve a friend. Forbid that we should use our little idea of goodness as a spear to wound those who are different. Forbid that we should feel superior to others when we are only more shielded. And may we encourage the secret struggle of every person. So be it. Go in peace. Happy New Year. Greet your neighbor." Very good.